Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning to you.
Morning, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm aching a bit because it was a pretty busy weekend here, doing some spring cleaning, throwing lots of stuff out, gardening, if you can believe that. I was out with the hedge clippers, clipping, well, not a hedge, but ivy at the back of the garden, and you'll be very proud of me. I did not trim right through the power cable of the hedge trimmers.
Wow. This is big progress, Andrew.
Sure is.
Congratulations. Taking full advantage of the international break, then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have not been paying very much attention to anything. I had a quick look at social media over the weekend and was like, no. I don't think so.
They call you the Ben White of podcasting. You know.
High praise.
Professional indeed. Focus, but then outside of that, not interested.
Yeah. Having none of it. I haven't been on the sunbeds though, unfortunately. But
shame. I have watched a bit of football. I watched half of England Brazil.
Right.
Second half, in which Endrick announced himself on the international scene with the winner.
Endrick.
It was a terrible game.
Was it terrible?
Yeah, it was. It was actually quite sad because it was like, you know, it's England, Brazil at Wembley.
Mm.
All right, it's a friendly, but it should be a real prestige friendly. You know, it should be one with a bit of glamour to it. But a number of big players didn't play, you know, Bukayo Saka had withdrawn, Harry Kane had withdrawn. For Brazil, there are a couple of stars missing, but also it was just so flat and so lifeless. The crowd were not into it. It was honestly like a waste of time. And I was sort of texting back and forth with mates during it, being like, what are we going to do about this? Because, you know, this international break, particularly at this point in the season, for these friendly games, it just feels so redundant, honestly.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's completely pointless. And, you know, I think regardless of what people think about international football, and your opinions will vary, of course, how invested you are in it. Pretty much everybody who follows their national team also supports a club team. And I think everyone recognizes that at this point of the season, the club games are far more important. You know, there were a few games, weren't there, where they were deciding playoffs for European championships and stuff like that. But is there any reason why those games couldn't just get played and everyone else gets the time off? Mm. Like, what is the point of, you know,
England versus Brazil when people are going through the motions? What is the point of Republic of Ireland versus Belgium? I saw literally tens of Belgians in Dublin on Saturday to come and watch a nil-nil draw with Ireland at Lansdowne Road. And it's sort of like, I mean, who benefits from this? Players don't. The managers don't really, because the players, you know, are sort of playing within themselves a bit, because they understand their obligations at this point of the season are to their club. Like, who's going to go the extra mile in a friendly game for their country, which might jeopardize their chances of, you know, playing for their club in the run-in to a title, a relegation scrap, a Champions League, whatever it might be? You know, nobody really benefits from these games at all. And, like, managers could potentially make decisions which could benefit them by, pick a load of players you would never normally pick and give them a go and make it a bit entertaining, or give somebody a chance. But no, it's the same old players. They learn nothing, and everyone else is just sitting there going, oh, please don't get injured. And, you know, I just don't see the point.
Yeah, I think you're right. I suppose with a tournament on the horizon, if there is any purpose, it's to have a look at a guy who's not been part of the group before, you know, someone like Cobby Minor or something, who came in for England and played a few minutes. But it's really, really, really difficult to kind of get excited about these friendly matches and, yeah, to invest in them. And I think for players as well, it's telling how many dropouts there've been across Europe, really, particularly from clubs who are involved in, let's say, the last stages of the Champions League. You know, I was watching, is it called The Overlap? The thing that, the podcast that Gary Neville does with Ian Wright and Roy Keane and Jamie Carragher.
The one that Ian Wright and Roy Keane make bearable.
Yeah, Jill Scott's on it as well, actually. And I think it's quite good, actually. I quite enjoy it, but it's partly because I've become quite obsessed with Roy Keane. Like, I just think he's a really compelling personality.
I enjoy his relationship with Ian Wright, which has developed over the years in a really kind of fun way, hasn't it?
It's quite a sweet bromance, but...
Don't let him catch you say that.
No. But there was a couple of things on the most recent episode of that. One was, you know, Neville saying, you know, I bet one or two of the Arsenal England players withdraw, which, you know, obviously came to pass. And then secondly, he was talking about Alex Ferguson and how Ferguson just wouldn't let players go to these March internationals. He just was like, absolutely no way. You know, occasionally he'd do a deal where he'd allow like Phil Neville and Nicky Butt to be called up, but the likes of, you know, Beckham and Scholes, it just wasn't happening. And he was really clear on that. And I just think that tells you, like, from a club manager's perspective, what a nightmare it is to suddenly lose the majority of your players, you know, at the most crucial point in the season.
They must hate it. Like, Mikel Arteta must be, you know, I think publicly he would say, it's an honour to play for your country. We wouldn't stand in the way of any player playing for their country. And even someone like Bukayo Saka, you hope, obviously, that... That's just common sense at play. If he had a little bit of a muscular injury, he's gone in, you know, some discussions at whatever level have been had. Is it worth risking Bukayo Saka for Arsenal and England at this point? No, we'll send him home. You know, that's the sort of optimistic hat I have on. The other part of me is like, well, Gareth Southgate has always been inclined to play Bukayo Saka, so maybe this injury is a little more serious than we thought. But, you know, Arteta must be sitting at home like, oh shit, Odegaard's playing like 90 minutes basically for Norway in a friendly against the Czech Republic. For what?
Yeah.
For what? You know, Declan Rice playing 90 minutes for England. For what? Like, what do you need to know or understand about Declan Rice at this point? I know it's Brazil. I know it's, in inverted commas, as you say, a prestige friendly. But come on, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the players, doesn't it? Some players really want to play in these games. I actually think Bukayo Saka is probably one of those players. Yeah, like, I think if he was fit, he'd be playing. I don't see him as a guy who would sort of duck it, or, you know, I think he loves playing for England. So that, like you, I'm a bit like, ooh, you know, in almost all circumstances, he plays football, doesn't he? Like, we've seen it so many times with Arsenal and England before. I mean, everything I'm told is that it's precautionary, and I really hope that is the case, and hopefully he'll be fit and ready for the Man City game. Apparently it's something he turned up at England camp with. He never took full part in training with England.
Right.
So, yeah, I think we can only sort of hope for the best and hope we're being told the truth on that one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it worries me only because he's a guy who always plays. Rice played for England, yeah. He played quite well, actually. He played as the deepest midfielder. It was quite interesting watching him in that position because in the last few weeks at Arsenal, we haven't seen a great deal of that. And actually, it sort of felt a little bit limiting for him. It looked like a little bit like a player playing within himself. And, you know, I'm on record. I've said I think that's probably his best position and probably where he has the greatest potential. But, yeah, I missed some of the sort of barnstorming box-to-box elements of his game that we've seen for Arsenal in recent weeks.
Mm, who was he playing with? I didn't see the England team.
He was playing with Bellingham, and Conor Gallagher had that kind of run-around-a-lot role, you know?
Right. I mean, he's good at that, the running around.
He is very good at the running around, yeah, yeah. So, and Rice was good, you know, he mopped things up and, you know, was impressive on the ball. But yeah, it's interesting. Just having seen him unlock a bit more to the attacking side of his game at Arsenal over the last couple of months, I did watch it and think, I think there might be more to this player than we're seeing here.
Mm. There was an injury in this game. If we're talking about managers being unhappy with international breaks, Kyle Walker went off with what looked like a hamstring injury. And of course, we play Manchester City next. And that will be an issue for Pep Guardiola, I suppose.
I guess so. I mean, Erling Haaland brushed off any injury concerns to play 75 minutes for Norway. But yeah, Walker went off and he's since left the England squad. I had a dream last night that I met Kyle Walker and was asking him about his injury. And he was very dismissive of me. He's called me a Ben White sympathizer. yeah, I mean, that I guess would be a little bonus for Arsenal if he's missing from the City game. But again, you know, there's still quite a long time until that match. You know, if it's just a bit of tightness or whatever, every chance he could see that off. So we'll have to wait and see. The only other football I watched in the weekend was a bit of the WSL game last night, which was extraordinary. I don't know if you saw any of it, but Arsenal were at Aston Villa and the game was poised at 1-1, and Arsenal in the second half missed an absurd flurry of chances. I mean, so much so that I was drafting an email to the Cronkies saying what these ladies need is a trip to Dubai. They couldn't hit a barn door, but then they got the breakthrough on about 85 minutes and ended up getting a third as well. But it was kind of extraordinary. It's like it's catching. Whatever had befallen the men's squad just before New Year happened to the women in that second half.
I think I saw a tweet last night with some stats on it, and you know, the XG for Arsenal was something like 3.5 in the second half alone.
Yeah, there was the second half. The sky flashed up a thing, which was like shots on goal in the second half. And I think Arsenal had 18 and Villa had had none. And it was still 1-1.
Wow.
And some of the misses, it was like, this team are never going to score. But got the breakthrough from set piece in the end, thankfully. And Stina Blackstenia scoring quite a funny goal where she appeared to be...
I saw that.
Yeah, offside, commit a handball, fall over. And still score. It was sort of right from the Theo Walcott school of goals. You know, remember he had that trait of like sometimes falling down, getting up, sticking it in the back of the net.
Oh, that one he scored against Chelsea.
One against Chelsea like that and one against Newcastle like that as well.
That's right. That was like the seven...
Yeah, I think that was a hat-trick goal.
Mm.
The old Theo Walcott fake out, fall on the floor, jump back up and tuck it away. So, but that was it for me. Really? I mean, I suppose that's a fair bit of football, but I've not really followed anything else. There are some competitive games. I know that Jakub Kiwior and Poland will face Wales in a playoff for Euro's place.
That's right. Poland beat Estonia 5-1. Karl Hein in goal for Estonia. So they're playing Wales.
And then Ukraine and Zinchenko face Iceland.
That's right.
In another playoff. So, I mean, I suppose you would make the Arsenal players favourites in those ties. I'd say Poland over Wales would be the favourites and probably Ukraine over Iceland.
Yes, but you never know.
You never know. Aaron Ramsey in that Wales squad.
Yeah.
Could he deliver another big moment?
Could he indeed? Who knows? We'll wait and see. That game takes place tomorrow, those two playoffs for Euro 2024. There's another one as well between Georgia and Greece, if anybody's invested in that one.
Is bothered. And, Sami Namina, Waka Waka, 60 million down the drain. Kai Havertz scored again.
He fucking did as well, didn't he?
Yeah, against France.
He did. France not bothering to play William Saliba, which is, you know, good for us.
Long may that continue, to be honest.
Yeah, I guess. But it can't, can it? Can it?
Who did they play? Let's have a look at their back four. So they played Pavard and Upamecano at centre-back with Hernandez and Koundé at full-backs. I mean, it's not a bad back four.
It's not bad, but Upamecano over Saliba?
Yeah, I don't think so. Not for me.
Not for me, Clive. No, yeah. Absolutely Jinx. Not.
And Kai Havertz, according to this Google formation, played up front for Germany.
Well, isn't it mad to think that just a few months ago, Kai Havertz was being played as a left back by Germany? Did he score a goal in that game as well? He might have scored a goal in that game. And there was sort of like semi-serious discussion about, maybe, you know, maybe this is the key to getting the best out of Kai Havertz. Has this German manager stumbled upon something here that even Mikel Arteta, with all his tactical know-how, hasn't been able to see? And now, you know, it's obviously fucking ludicrous to even consider it.
I think maybe we were clutching at straws at that time, Andrew. But Kai's obviously blossomed.
Well, I'm not saying we were having that discussion. I'm just saying I saw it to other people.
Collectively.
Yeah, you know, other people.
I wouldn't want to. I'm not going to name names, but, you know. But then he's back up front and firing and scoring goals for Germany. So that was good to see. I know that Jorginho played for 70 minutes in America.
In America.
Against Ecuador, I think.
Did he play? He played in that one against, that was in, let me have a look here. Jorginho, he did play. He got booked and was substituted in the 67th minute.
There you go. And David Raya, I think, played a half for Spain. His fourth cap. He's got to have a decent shout, David Raya, at the number one shirt of Spain, I would think.
Who else is there? Who's the other guy?
I think it's... Is it Unai Simon?
Yeah, that's it.
He's got 38 caps, yeah. And he's the Bilbao keeper.
It could be, I mean, it could be just me. It could be a bit of trauma. It could be a bit of something else. I just don't fully trust a guy called Unai.
Sure.
That might be my issue, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. Whether they feel that way at the Spanish Federation, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. There are other games, of course, taking place this week. More friendlies. Who are England? Are England playing Belgium?
Yeah, they're playing Belgium, actually. They're after the thriller in Dublin.
Wow.
They come to London. The circus comes to town.
Ireland are playing Switzerland. Germany face the Netherlands. Who else are we looking at here? Norway against Slovakia. So we wait and see what happens to Martin Odegaard in that particular game. Who else is playing?
France, Chile.
I bet
Spain, Brazil, in Madrid. Belgium come to Wembley. Shorn of Kevin De Bruyne, of course, who has withdrawn.
He has withdrawn. Let's have a load of the Portuguese players, I think, as well.
Right. Yeah. It's all a bit, feels a bit like a waste of time.
100%.
Fires. Which, you know, obviously are important to those nations.
So how are you feeling, you know, on a Monday? We're still a little bit away, of course, from football returning. But are you, is your mind beginning to sort of get itself in the, oh, fuck, here we go zone?
Well, I mean, it better, right? We're sort of, we're you know when you go on a roller coaster, we're on the bit where you sort of clank up the slope.
Yes.
Know? And then Friday, around the time of Mikel's press conference, we'll be sort of teetering, looking over the edge anxiously.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're on the ride. I mean, it's pretty relentless in theory between then and the end of the season.
It is, because the fixtures have been rejigged a bit as well, haven't they? So
So we've got Chelsea, for example, and Spurs in the same week, I think. Is that right? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Arsenal-Chelsea on the 23rd, Sunday, the 28th, the North London Derby. But that, of course, could be moved if we're still in Champions League action. I saw somebody saying that Tottenham might have 2 weeks off ahead of this game.
I saw that as well.
I don't understand.
Yeah, it was Thornley 29 on Discord. He said Tottenham get 15 days off before the North London Derby, while we play Villa, Bayern, Wolves, and Chelsea in that period. How do you look at the rhythm versus rest argument?
Why don't they have a game that the previous weekend?
I know they've got a floating fixture against Chelsea that's yet to be rearranged, because I keep seeing their fans going mad about it.
Mm.
When are we going to find out when we're playing Chelsea? We need to know when we're losing to Chelsea.
They're supposed to play Man City on the 20th, but is that because Man City are now in the FA Cup semi-final? Which is probably taking place that weekend.
Yes, that's right, because that our Premier League game with Wolves may have been moved, but Wolves had the good grace to go out to Coventry.
Mm.
So, yeah, they could have a big old run-up for that North London derby. I mean, I have to say, I understand the sort of point of the rhythm thing, but I think I'd rather be the team resting before that one.
Yeah, maybe. But imagine like the Tottenham forums the day after the game, where they're going like, we had 15 days to rest and get the massages, and we got beaten 4-1 at home by Arsenal, who've played 26 games in the last 8 days.
That's true.
That's what we're going to have to, you know, come to terms with, which I think I'm more than capable of
doing.
You're
prepared to do that.
I am. I mean, is this, though, you know, the comments Mikel Arteta's made about, you know, you've got to be able to play every 3 or 4 days. If you're a top player, you've got to be every 3 or 4 days. I mean, is this kind of what that mantra is all about? You know, about making sure that his squad are, I suppose, mentally prepared as well as physically prepared. I mean, there's only so much you can do physically between games when they're coming with the frequency that they will be in this point of the season. Like, there's not going to be, you know, a huge amount of intensive training or anything like that. It's going to be game worn down, you know, a bit of tactical stuff, and then, you know, you go again, you play again. So the mental aspect of this, I think, is going to be the most interesting, is like, can they deal with the pressure? Because the pressure is going to mount, the pressure is going to sort of ramp up at this point of the season. And I wonder if the comments that he has made in the past about being able to cope with this kind of schedule are you know, have been designed to sort of put this in the minds of his players that, okay, if you want to win, if you want to succeed, this is what you've got to, this is the challenge you've got to rise to, if you like.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense. I think physically it's obviously very demanding, but mentally, maybe even more so. In some respects, I sort of think the hardest thing might be, how do you maintain momentum and confidence and focus and belief when something inevitably goes against you? You know, we've got so many games in this period that I think I can say with some confidence, we won't win them all. I hope I'm wrong. That would be really nice. But at some point, there's going to be a setback. And with so much at stake, we just can't remotely afford to allow that to kind of perpetuate from there, sort of as it did a bit last season, you know, when we had those three consecutive draws and we seemed to stutter. And what went wrong in one game played into the next. We just have to try desperately to avoid that this time around.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, momentum is a brilliant thing until it's halted, and then you have to get yourself going again. You have to be able to put these little setbacks behind you, you know, whether it happens in the Premier League or if it happens in a European game, we'll have to wait and see. But it is going to be a big challenge. I mean, we had a question on the Discord from the Matt Myth. And he says, with a game every 3 days for the foreseeable future and rotation necessary, which of our current bench options do you think will emerge as having an important role in the run-in? For me, I think Fabio Vieira could have a big part to play, starting at home to Luton.
Wow. Mm. Interesting. Which of our bench options? It's a tricky question because it's like, I think I know what he means by that, and he means the sort of second string. But recently our bench has had some really good players on it, you know, like Gabriel Jesus. Fabio Vieira. It's interesting. I was sort of asked recently in like an athletic roundtable discussion about the run-in, which Arsenal player I would want to preserve from injury above all others. And I thought long and hard about that. I think it's really difficult because, you know, we saw the effect that losing Saliba had on us last season, but maybe we're a bit more defensively stable this year than we were. Declan Rice has been brilliant, you know. Bukayo Saka's Bukayo Saka. But in the end, I actually chose Martin Odegaard because, for me, in terms of what he brings to the team, both in the intensity of his pressing and his work off the ball, but also just his sheer quality and ability to make and score chances, I don't think we have anyone else in that position who looks close to replicating that. I'm not saying they don't have the potential, but if it was tomorrow and they had to come into the team and replicate what he offers, for me, you know, the likes of Vieira or Smith Rowe, maybe, it's just a real unknown at this point in time.
I think that's right. Like, you could probably rejig most positions in the team and still be effective. But I do think Odegaard, when you look at the stats and when you look at the sort of output he has in terms of possession, in terms of passes into the final third, passes into the box, not simply just goals and assists. I think in terms of how he impacts the way we play in the final third, it is hard to see anyone else come in and do exactly what he does.
Look, we don't want to lose anybody, and there's lots of important players. Yeah, yeah. But I think you're right. I think we could reshuffle a little bit to accommodate other absentees. I just think, I think he's kind of a one-off in the squad at the moment. And so I would love if the question proved to be true and Fabio Vieira did step up and deliver something, you know, because I think we may need it. I think what will I go for? Would Trossard count as a bench player? Not really.
I don't think so, because he's sort of involved. If we're looking at, what was the exact question again?
A bench player to make an impact.
Bench players. I mean, bench players at this moment in time, I would say, are Vieira.
Cedric.
Vieira, Smith Rowe, Partey, Nelson, Nketiah. I can see why you went for Vieira, because, you know.
Yeah, so can I. Right. And Karl-Heinz not an option in this. We saying Karl-Heinz not an option?
We are.
The back of Estonia's 5-1 defeat to Poland.
I suppose Tomiyasu could be an option. Tomiyasu and Timber could be options, but it's about what sort of end product, or how do you gauge the end product of a defender versus an attacking player, I suppose.
I mean, Timber's quite an attractive choice, or Tomiyasu, I could see them coming on and helping close out certain games. Look, I'm going to be a romantic, and I'm going to choose Emile Smith Rowe. I would love to believe that there is another little sort of coda to the season to be written by Emile Smith Rowe. Do I believe it? Honestly, in my heart, not especially. I'm not convinced he'll get the minutes and the opportunities. But he is overdue an important goal.
That is for sure.
Maybe he will find one between now and the end of the season.
That would be lovely, wouldn't it? That would be lovely. I think we can all, well, I think we can kind of see where it's going with him. But if he were to step up, I mean, it is so, so important that we find a way to use our squad in the best way possible for this run-in. You know, there aren't going to be significant opportunities to rest players. I had another question about this as well, but I'll come back to it maybe. But when you think about the fixtures and who needs to start most of the games, there are very few opportunities to sort of say, okay, we'll make a few changes. I'm taking nothing for granted about a game against Luton, because Luton, as we saw in the game at Kenilworth Road, have something about them. And if you've looked at Luton and watched Luton throughout this season, you will know that they've got something about them and have an ability to stay in games where maybe they shouldn't and cause the opposition problems. Mm-hmm. But in much the same way as let's say, Smith Rowe started against Sheffield United, is the game against Luton a chance to start players like Smith Rowe, like Nelson, even to give Saka a bit of a break? Saka is going to hopefully play against Manchester City. Then you've got to go to Brighton. Then you've got to go to Bayern Munich. Then you're playing Aston Villa. Then it's Bayern Munich again. Then it's Wolves away. Then it's Chelsea. Then it's Tottenham. Like, is the Luton game the last chance to rest Bukayo Saka for basically the rest of the season?
Potentially. And if, you know, assuming everyone returns healthy, touch wood, then, you know, we have the capacity to play a pretty good front line without him. You know, you could play Gabriel Jesus on the right-hand side, potentially. Kai Havertz through the middle. One of Havertz or Martinelli or even Smith Rowe maybe on the left. So, you know, Trossard, I meant rather, not Havertz on the left. You know, so we could field a pretty decent front three there without Bukayo Saka. I think the key will be making probably one or two changes here and there. So not upsetting the rhythm of the team too much. But also, I think what happens against Luton will be very informed by the result of the Etihad. You know, I think if Arsenal are beaten at Manchester City, I don't think Mikel Arteta will take any chances in the next game, because I think he'll know the danger, the risk of two bad results back to back in a race that's tight as this could almost sort of put you not out of it, but certainly, you know, take the momentum away from you.
Yeah. It's so tough, isn't it? Because on the one hand, everyone's going, you've got to rotate, you've got to use your squad, you've got to keep legs fresh. And all of that makes complete sense and perfect sense. But the reality of what you've got to do in every single Premier League game is another aspect to this. And some people say, look, if you can't rotate for a game against Luton, then, you know, what's your squad all about? And I think that's a reasonable argument, but it's tough. You know, I think managers, generally speaking, will default to their strongest possible side for nearly every game.
Yeah. I think really, in Arsenal's good results this year, we've seen the ideal template, which is you go out and win games early, and then you can give people their rest in the second half. I know it's not quite the same as saying someone have the day off or sit on the bench and don't worry about anything. But, you know, you can sometimes make a change at half time, at 60 minutes, with the game pretty much already won. And, you know, if we can do that, then we'll be on to a good thing. I mean, and Luton is a fixture where, again, without being disrespectful, we have the potential to do that. I suppose the problem is you look at the rest of our games and you say they don't look like fixtures where ordinarily you'd expect them to be won by half time.
No, but as well, do we maybe over-index? Like a team like Manchester City or a team like Liverpool, when it won the league, to what extent did they rotate for all of their games as they went and won the league and went, you know, battled Manchester City, for example, while getting themselves to Champions League finals. Did Mo Salah start every game for Liverpool?
Probably.
In that period? Did Mane start every game? Did Firmino start pretty much every game? Like, is this not the job?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true. And I suspect they did play an enormous amount of minutes. And there are certain players in this team who, all being well, will do that. But it's a juggling act, and it's one we're not accustomed to. And it's one Mikel Arteta's not particularly accustomed to.
Mm.
So I think that as a manager is sort of his greatest challenge, really, in this period, is the squad management side of it. You know, how do you keep the momentum going, keep everybody sharp, so if you need to call on them, you can. Protect players from overexertion and injury. There's so many different variables he has to consider in his selection. And I think, honestly, his instinct, despite all that, will be wherever possible, he will go as strong as he feels he can.
Yeah.
Because we know that about him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking forward to all of this?
I am, actually. I am, I think. I am looking forward to it because I feel much better about it than I did last season.
In what way? In that you think we're better prepared, better capable? Me speak English. More capable or better equipped?
Yeah, I think we're better equipped in terms of the squad. I think in terms of the injury picture, again, look, cross everything for what remains of this international break, but we're in a position where we've got players coming back at the right time of the season rather than losing key personnel. Mm. You know, by this point last year, I think we just lost Tomiyasu and Saliba, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So I think that situation looks healthier in every respect. And I also think there's a different kind of pressure. I think there's less pressure because last season we were the front runners and we had all the talk of the title and the narrative was such that, you know, either we won it or we blew it.
Mm.
And I don't feel that can be quite the same for us at the moment, partly because it's a three-horse race, so there's less sort of focus on Arsenal specifically, but also because, you know, it is so tight and it has been so tight. We are currently top, but, you know, that hasn't been the case for much of the season. I feel like, yeah, that there's a bit less burden around it, holding on to this lead, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Feels less burdensome. It feels less... And I think we're more ready for it. So I wouldn't say that I'm especially sort of cocky or confident about our chances. I'm quite realistic about them, really. But, yeah. And again, that might be part of it, you know. Mm. I've not quite this season at any point been in a place where I was last year where I'll hold my hands up and say there were moments that I thought, well, this is destined. We're going to win this league. Yeah. Too many things have happened. I haven't quite been on that ride. And actually, emotionally, I think that makes me much better prepared for the running as a fan.
Okay.
What about you?
I mean, what did I write in the blog today? Like, what's the line? This is where I've wanted us to be for so long, but now that we're here, I just want to close my eyes and for someone to tap me on the shoulder and say, we've done it. But I am excited. You know, I am. There is part of me who is just like, give me some twilight sleep for the next 2 months. And then someone wakes me up and goes, they did it. They did it. And I'd be like, yes. But, you know, this is part of it. This is what you've got to go through. This is what you've got to experience. You know, for all the complaining when the things were bad, the other side of being good is the stakes are so high that it feels like you've got a lot to lose. And genuinely, I think if this Arsenal team can win the title this season, with the run-in that we've got, with the competition we're up against, I think it will be up there with, you know, the best title wins in the history of this football club. And look, it's 20 years since the Invincibles. I'm not saying it would be the same as that, but it would be, like, it's really, really difficult to win the Premier League. Really difficult. Nobody else can do it at the moment apart from Manchester City, and Liverpool did it once, but that's it. And, you know, when you look at the fixture list and when you look at what we've got to do and where we've got to go and where we've got to win games and who we've got to take points off with the schedule, you know, it would be, I think, a massive, massive achievement and a huge credit to these players if they could do it. But this is, it's exciting and it's terrifying at the same time, you know.
For me, it's got to be Premier League, Champions League, double or nothing, you know.
Right, okay. Well, you know.
I'm not prepared to negotiate on that, Andrew. And I'm disappointed that you disregarded the Champions League there, you know.
I didn't disregard it.
More of you.
I took it for granted.
Where's your ambition? You took it for granted. Okay, I like that.
I just assumed we were going to win the Champions League, you know. I was talking about the Premier League. This is the...
Well, in terms of the Premier League win and sort of where it would rank, I think that a big factor that contributes to that is the length of wait, for one.
Sure.
You know? And there's so many Arsenal fans, many of them listening, who don't remember when we last won the league. Or
weren't, you know, born.
God forbid, weren't born.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Bukayo Saka was three, you know, two and a half, three, something like that.
Right.
When we last won the league. He doesn't remember it. Give the boy something to remember.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that would definitely make it a biggie. But look, it's going to be, like I said, a roller coaster. I'm sure there's going to be great moments and there's going to be setbacks, and we'll probably think we're out of it and then we'll be back in it. And I doubt it's just going to be a serene procession to the lifting of both trophies. But
no.
Yeah, I'm ready for the ride. If anything, I'm grateful for this little respite. I think we all needed this break to sort of take a deep breath. Do you know what I mean?
Take a deep breath and
before the plunge.
Yeah, we're diving down into the madness and the mayhem of what's left of this Premier League and Champions League season, of course.
What's that?
All right.
What's that?
Let us take a little break here. We will come back and do some of your questions and more in part two right after this.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter. What did I just say there? Did I?
That was all right, I think.
Was it? My brain just fucking went like halfway through that. I was going, did I say welcome back to the Arsecast Twitter? No, I didn't.
Well,
anyway,
it sounded good to me. But if I'm honest with you, Andrew, I wasn't really listening.
If people knew how often you said that to me, they'd be astonished.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the questions bit. The questions part. We do questions.
We question now.
Do.
Twitter, Discord.
Asky.
Do.
Ask. Do you want to go first?
I think I'd better.
I think you better. See if I can recharge my brain. I had just had coffee before I fucking, you know, before we started this podcast, but it's not working the way I want it to.
Here we go. So I've got a couple of questions here about, of all things, the centre-forward position.
Right.
Non-flying Dutchman on the Discord says, goodly morning, gentlemen. Do you think there is a scenario where Havertz has such a strong end to the season that he convinces Arteta he should be the starting striker next season? Or is that a position we're going to spend big on in the summer regardless?
Ooh. I mean, it is possible, isn't it? He has been playing very well there. He's been very effective.
Form.
He's in good form. He's scoring for Germany.
He cost a lot of money.
He did. I mean, it is possible, I suppose. I mean, what happens if he, you know, scores 7-8 goals in the next 10 Premier League games and we go on and win the title, and this is, you know, this is the guy whose goals have propelled us towards the title?
Yeah, I mean, Arteta doesn't really do sentimentality, though, does he? I don't think he would make it decision based on that.
They probably have their plans in place for the squad, the summer arrivals. They probably know what they want. And I suppose if Havertz does do what we just said he might do, or hope he might do, then it would just be another string to our bow on top of what they already want to do, I guess.
Well, that's it. And also, it might not just be about Kai Havertz. What if Eddie Nketiah leaves the club, for example? Is there then a necessity to sign a striker? I suppose the question is like spend big, you know, are we still going to spend big? And I guess it depends what you think big is. You know, are Arsenal going to buy £150 million forward in that sort of top price bracket? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they'll add one. Look, because we had this question as well, similar theme from Aaron. And Aaron said,
Aaron.
Goodly morning, gents. Havertz is in great form as a forward. Well, we all agreed on that. It's his best position, and the same could be said about Trossard and Jesus. Together, the three of them are arguably the best trio of false nines in world football. Are we better off looking for a winger and a midfielder instead? I mean, they're not bad three options, are they, in that system?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I guess the thing you would say, though, is Trossard is, well, he's nearly 30, so Jesus is quite injured quite often.
Well, also, for me, the point is, yes, they're a brilliant trio of false nines.
But do you need a 9-9?
Yeah, maybe you just want a different profile of forward, you know, somebody who's more of a box player.
Yeah.
Which I think ostensibly is sort of the role Eddie is kind of supposed to have in the squad. I think maybe there'd be something to be said for adding someone like that, just for variety or different game scenarios.
Well, what about this one? Because we had a question on the Discord from Nuno Tavares.
Yeah.
And he says, last week you talked about how availability will play a big part if the club sign a player or not. How do you pronounce this guy's name, James? Victor Gyökeres?
I'm going with Gyökeres, but Gyökeres. I don't know.
I apologize. for butchering his name. I am very, very sorry to all our Swedish listeners. But anyway, he played 92 out of 92 games for Coventry and has played 24 out of 25 league games for Sporting while getting 50 goals and assists in all competitions. And I looked that up. He's played 39 games this season for Sporting. He scored 36 goals and got 14 assists, which are kind of incredible numbers.
14 assists is a lot of assists.
It is.
For a centre forward. I know it's a lot of goals, but yeah, wow, that is impressive.
How interested do you think the club are in him, considering his age, career path, and potential price? And I suppose the career path, he was at Brighton. Brighton identified him, and then they
Coventry,
let him go.
As well.
Then he was at Coventry, of course, and now he's gone. He's having a kind of remarkable season. Is he a Drogba type who is only just, you know, at 24, 25 years of age, beginning to sort of realize his full potential? Or is this like, this season is a, like, has he, for example, you ever see the film Logan? You know, Logan, where he's going around spiking people in the head with his fucking claws because he's Wolverine, sure. But he's in bits. He's absolutely fucking wrecked. And he's running through the woods and he takes a big injection of green jism. I don't know what it is. Magic jism that, you know, he has. And it gives him all his powers back again. Has Viktor Gyökeres, has he got a big vial of green jism? And is that what that is? That's what's propelled him through this season? Or is this a guy who's flourishing now and we should be interested in?
No, I think it's the jism. Pretty sure it's the jism of those options.
Right.
The name pronunciation is chaos, by the way, because obviously he's Swedish international, but it's a Hungarian name, I believe. So God knows what that's supposed to sound like.
I don't know.
Between those two countries, they'll figure it out. 100 million euro release clause.
Doesn't mean you'd have to pay 100 million, but, you know.
It doesn't, but, you know, it gives them a starting point in negotiations, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the old, 50 goals and assists in 39 games is, it's pretty good. You might want to have to pay a bit for this player.
Yeah. It's not bad, is it?
No.
He's not had a bad year. How interested are Arsenal in him? I think he'll certainly be on the list. How can he not be? With numbers like he's producing, and, you know, playing in a league, Portugal, where you, as a Premier League club, you'd sort of fancy your chances of being able to get him out of there. I think he'll certainly be on the list. I'm trying to think of players who've come from the Portuguese league and really impressed in the Premier League. And there are plenty. I mean, you know,
Fabio Vieira
obviously is the foremost one that any of us can think of. But, you know, Bruno Fernandes came and had a big impact straight away. Darwin Nunes, you know, has his critics, but certainly things happen when he's on a football pitch.
No question about that.
So there's some pedigree there. It's not quite the sort of, you know, Mateo Kesman Eredivisie phenomenon.
Who was the guy that went to Middlesbrough? Who was that guy?
Alfonso Alves.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I think his name was Afonso, not Alfonso, confusingly.
Afonso.
That always foxed me. But he, yes, that didn't work out, did it?
No.
He had scored, I think, I'm right in saying, a bajillion goals in Holland.
I think you're underestimating. A trillion, bajillion, gazillion.
So, yeah, I think this Gyökeres will surely be on the list. I have heard that, you know, but it's not a long list. I mean, there is only so many, you know, centre forwards with that kind of potential in Europe. Surely he's going to get a move this summer. I mean, you don't produce those kinds of numbers generally and stay in Portuguese football too long.
No, I mean, the fact that he's only doing it, I mean, he could go on and, you know, spend the next 5-6 years just banging in goals all over the place. Does it give you sort of...
He's already 25.
Yeah, does it give you some pause for thought that he's, you know, only having this career or only having this season now? You know, it's so difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, players can blossom at different times.
And particularly in that position, no? I mean... I was thinking about Olivier Giroud recently. When am I not? You know, just daydreaming. But what age was he when we signed him?
24, I think, something like that, from Montpellier, yeah.
Yeah, from Montpellier. And he was 25. And his career was a similar story where he'd been a bit of a journeyman and then had blossomed in a big way. Montpellier had just won the league, I think.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
And he'd kind of led them to that. But, you know, before that, his career was nothing to write home about particularly. I'm just trying to find his...
He went to Grenoble. Then there was...
Alone in the non-league, essentially, with Istres. Then Ligue 2 with Tours for two seasons. Came up. And, yeah, had two seasons in Ligue 1 with Montpellier. I mean, and look at the career he's had since, right? Arsenal, Chelsea, Milan, won international trophies. I mean, he may be the exception that proves the rule. I don't know. He's 37 years old. He's still playing for France. He's had an amazing career. But I do think Drogba is another one who was, I think, 24-ish when he came to Chelsea. I do sort of think those sort of pure centre-forward types... they can mature a little bit later. And maybe Gyökeres is one of those. It would have an element of risk to it. But I think we've got to give some credit to Arsenal's recruitment team. I mean, they haven't got loads wrong, I think, since Edu took proper charge of things. By and large, when they've gone and spent big money on a player, it's been... they've got it. They've got value out of them in some way, shape, or form.
Even if it's taken a little while for one or two of them to demonstrate that, I suppose.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we talked about Fabio Vieira a couple of times on the show. He might be the outlier in some respects, in that a lot of money was paid for him. I mean, it doesn't feel like a lot of money these days, 35 million, but I think it was. And we haven't really seen the return yet on that one.
No.
But. Who's to say we won't? Maybe the guy in part one will be right and it will be between now and the end of the season.
He is only 23 as well, so there is
time. Yeah.
There is time for him to convince.
I think did Arsenal Vision do a scouting pod on Gyökeres? I think they did recently.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to listen yet. So.
I'll certainly be giving a close listen to that. I just don't think you can ignore those numbers. Sometimes players do just explode. And maybe he's doing that. And in his time at Coventry, I know he was, a lot of people in the Premier League were looking at him in that period. Sporting paid 24 million to sign him.
That's quite a lot for a Portuguese side, yeah.
Yeah. So they'll be expecting, I don't know. I struggled to see a world in which you could get him for less than double that, you know. You'd think. And as I say, they've got that release clause as a starting point, and they'll point to the Darwin Nunes transfer and say, you know, that's the going rate.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's have another question. I've got a feeling that you won't like this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
It's from Leeds Gunner 1. And it dredges up the Ben White stuff slightly again. So it says, should the other English Arsenal players boycott the national team duty in solidarity with Benjamin White? It's clear to many he's being thrown under the bus by the present coaching staff.
I mean, I think it is very much a personal thing. I don't think Ben White would expect Bukayo Saka and Declan Rice and Aaron Ramsdale to not play for England.
Surely not. I wouldn't have. I mean, I think I can say with confidence that he won't care.
Yes. Something like that. No, I mean, look, it's his issue, or it's the issue that one particular member of the England coaching squad has with Ben White, I would say, more than anything Ben White has done himself. It's being framed very much as a Ben White decision, which it probably is, but I think it was a decision that he was not forced to take, but put in a position where his mind was made up for him by somebody else.
Yeah.
So you know, I think he will understand completely that his teammates have got their own wishes when it comes to playing international football that don't align with his, and that's kind of all there is to it, you know?
I agree with you on that. I agree with you. And I think as well, you know, a lot has been made of this, and understandably so. It's a big story, and Ben White's a brilliant player, and a lot of people would like to see him playing for England. And I think they may well see him play for England under a different regime. But I also think that this is just kind of football in some respects. You know, there are often players who, for whatever reason, their face doesn't fit in a project. It may be that there's a row or a disagreement, or, you know, there's a clash of personalities. And we've seen that at Arsenal, you know, even in Mikel Arteta's time, where certain players, you know, they're full foul of the regime, and Ben White and the regime have kind of fallen out with each other from an England perspective. That is sort of the nature of football.
Yeah. I think another interesting aspect to this is the fact that when it's talked about, as it rarely is, but when it's talked about in footballing terms, you know, there's all this talk about, well, England have got Kyle Walker, and they've got Trent, and they've got Trippier, and they've got these guys who, you know, are maybe in the minds of some people, probably not a lot of Arsenal fans, but in some people, ahead of Ben White in the pecking order for right back. But then there's also Ben White is a very, very good central defender as well. And England have Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
Like, you know. And
bringing on Esri Konsa, I think, against Brazil. You know, it's we haven't got a ton of options at centre.
This is what I mean. You know,
Is Mark Gehi a better centre half than Ben White? I'm not so sure. And also, it won't have escaped anybody's attention that Kyle Walker is now injured for England. Mm-hmm. Kieran Trippier has been in diabolical form since, you know, winter last year.
And both of those are, what, Walker's 33, Trippier's 33.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't want to play right back, as Gareth Southgate interprets the position of right back, that's for sure. I think there's a decent chance he'll start in midfield for England in the summer. So, yeah, I mean, look, there's a clear need for Ben White from a football perspective, but you know, for whatever reason, he and the management just clearly don't see eye to eye. And that will change. I think because Gareth Southgate's been in the job for so long, you know, I think it's coming up for 8 years or something like that. Very unusual in international football. And it feels like there's a sense of permanence about that. But there's a very decent chance he won't be in the job, you know, come the end of the Euros. Who knows? He might be in the job at Old Trafford. That'd be quite fun.
Sure.
But I think we'll see Ben White play for England at some point in the future. I really do.
What about this? I enjoyed this from Woody on the Discord. Reports of Ben White taking a break in Dubai raise an important question. Is he solar powered? the most environmentally friendly footballer there is, Ben White, solar powered.
Is he solar powered? Very possibly. Very possibly. I mean, his form has picked up as we've sort of headed into spring.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. He's a vitamin D guy.
Yeah, he needs those vitamin D drops.
He doesn't need any of that fucking green jism, just some good old-fashioned vitamin D.
Everybody needs a bit of green jism in their life, Andrew. what about this? We need to help this man, JMark91.
Okay.
I assume it's the man, actually. I don't know for sure that it is. Goodly interlal, gents. It's my partner's brother's 30th birthday on the day we play City. Partner's brothers. Okay, so like a brother-in-law. And although I told my partner about this game a while ago, she insists that I can't watch it as we are busy for the day with him. Do I risk watching it on my phone or go cold turkey and just await the outcome after the match when I get home?
Does that mean sitting down to watch the match?
I guess that's one of the options.
Or just sort of turning on your phone and finding out what's what. I mean, you could always follow it on the Arseblog live blog, you know, just surreptitiously on your phone loaded up there. It reloads in real time, so you can just sort of, you know, oh, got to go to the bathroom, be right back.
oh, I have some terrible stomach cramps. I just got to sit here in the bathroom for another few minutes. And yeah, just do that.
What about an earpiece? Like a very small earpiece that's got radio commentary.
Yeah.
And so you're engaging in normal conversation. You'd be like, oh, well, how lovely to see you.
Go!
And then they're like, what was that? And you're like, no, nothing. I'm just happy that it's your birthday again.
The goal was to make it to your party. That's what I'm saying. The goal was to make it. Ah, for fuck's sake!
Damn you!
Fuck this shit!
What's wrong? Damn you to hell! should we cut the cake? That kind of thing.
That sort of vibe. Yeah, I think there are ways that you can stay in touch, even if, you know, as many people do, they've got to do their family duties and the priorities, you know, that come with families and friends and people who don't understand just how important this game of football is that you can't control in any way.
Idiots. Have you ever tried the old record it, DVR? Is that what they say in America? I think it is. And watch it sort of post the game as live.
No.
You ever gone for that?
No. Well, yeah, no, because I'm like always doing the fucking live blog. So it's... I could never have done it, though, anyway. In a previous time where that might have been possible, I just wouldn't be able to do that.
It's very difficult. I have done it once or twice. And the problem with it is I can't resist the urge to fast forward. Like, when the ball's like with the goalkeeper at the back and they're taking a goal kick, I just start fast forwarding because I need to know the result. And I'm fighting the urge to just bloody Google it or whatever.
Yeah.
That I can't sit and watch 90 minutes for which the ball is out of play for 40 of them in good faith, like pretending it's live. I can't convince myself of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know that like all the fallout's happening elsewhere and I can't hack that. So, but I have missed games several times in my life, you know, being on a fly or on stage or whatever it might be. And there is something quite, if it's a big game, sometimes it is quite nice to just find out the score. Like,
that's what I mean. I was talking about with the title. It's like, there you go.
Exactly.
We've won the title.
Wake me up when it's over.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of thing. Yeah,
totally that. And like, especially if it's a game that there's some sort of nerves around, not having to live that 90 minutes, probably adds years on your life. So I would say don't try and record it and watch it later. I think that's a fool's errand. I think...
just keep up with it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, it's not like, are you checking your phone just for the football? No, everyone checks their phone all the time these days. So you're not going to look out of place.
Listen, it's a family gathering. You're all going to be staring at your phones anyway. I guarantee it.
Exactly. Conversation will be minimal. Everyone's just staring at their phone. That guy's doing Wordle.
Exactly. I mean, if they've organised some sort of activity, like zorbing or something for his birthday.
What is zorbing?
Zorbing. It's, I think, where you get in a big inflatable ball and roll down a hill.
Oh, that looks fun to me, actually.
Yeah. But it's going to be harder to check the score, I reckon, in your zorb. So if you're zorbing, just check the score full time. Because imagine the feeling if, like, you've not watched a kick and you go on and it's Arsenal 1. 2-1, and you get that in one go, bang, hit, they've won. Man, you'll be flying. And if they've lost, at least you've not had to endure it.
True. But if we win, then you'll be thinking, I've got to fucking zorb during every game between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, that's true. And that could get expensive.
Yeah.
Maybe let's none of us watch on Sunday. Deal?
Sure.
We all just go on our phones 10 minutes after full time and see what the score was, and then we react accordingly.
Yeah.
Twitter be so calm during the 90 minutes.
Incredible stuff. Incredible. Okay, here is a question about Gabriel Martinelli. It comes from Elmo Sled, or Elmo Sled with two Ds. I don't know.
It's on the Discord. He says, I wonder if we underestimate the value of Gabriel Martinelli, because he watched highlights of our 24 games during the break. He said many were concerned when he was in a scoring drought, but he stretches the other team so much and creates chaos and even a bit of fear for them, I think. Rewatching our second goal against Liverpool, I think a huge part of Van Dijk's error was because he became panicky when he saw Martinelli coming for the ball at full tilt.
I do think that he's a little bit, not underrated, but maybe slightly misunderstood in terms of what he offers the team and the role that he plays.
Mm-hmm.
I actually keep trying to think of like the right analogy for it, and I can't nail it. Maybe a listener will. But it's like it's something about him being out on a limb, you know, like he's out there on his own. He's like the scout ahead of the army or something like that. And he plays a very tactically important and quite disciplined role in this team. And I've said it before, but I often think of Thierry Henry when he went to Barcelona and was basically told, you've got to go and stand on the wing, mate, even though you're Thierry Henry.
Mm.
And I feel like that about Martinelli at times. He has the potential to be so much more and so much more explosive and, you know, play in central areas. But he does what Arteta asks of him. And I think this City game is a big one for him, especially if Kyle Walker's not there.
Mm.
Because I watched that Manchester derby and I couldn't believe how many times Onana was able to clear the ball on the diagonal into the space behind City's fullbacks. And Kyle Walker is obviously incredibly quick, so he gives you that recovery. But if you don't have him, I don't think they're quite the same. And the idea of Martinelli running into those spaces, I think, is really exciting, especially with Saka on the other side. I've sort of been... I mean, we've not seen Martinelli, have we, for a couple of games? Ostensibly to get him ready for Man City. So I really hope he can be, because I think he could be really important.
Yeah, I think there is something... I know what you mean about that analogy, because you're right, there is a discipline to his game. We have seen a few little different aspects to it now where I think he's making runs across the box a little bit more, and I don't know specifically if that's to do with Jorginho's presence in the team and that ability to find the pass from deep, to look for the run of Martinelli as he works his way across the box. But yeah, he can appear to be like stranded at times or on the fringes or the periphery, and then all of a sudden he's a, you know, you're driving along and you look to your left and there's a fucking wasp in your fucking car as you're driving, and that puts a little bit of the shits up you, you know?
Yeah, it's like how you would use the cavalry in military terms to sort of outflank the opposition. I will get there. I will figure out how to describe it effectively. Mm. But yeah, I think... his kind of selflessness in that role is not spoken about often enough. And I really, 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 really hope he's going to be fit for City. I mean, that was certainly when he got the injury, there was kind of a sense of we're not going to rush him and he'll be back for City. And I just hope that's what's going to come to pass.
Fingers crossed, because I think he is... I think, you know, we talked about him as somebody who in the second half of this season could be really, really important and very effective for Arsenal. And I think in particular in games like Sundays, with all due respect to Leandro Trossard, who might play there if Martinelli's not available, I think City will be much more worried about Martinelli than Trossard.
So I agree.
We'll see.
I agree. Shall we do the... Critical T ratings game.
Yeah, why not? Let's do a bit of that.
It's become an Interlal tradition, really. Mm. Thank you, Critical T, for supplying this. So for those who are unaware, I'll be reading some player ratings from Andrew's past on Arsblog, and he has to determine the player and the match that it's from.
Mm.
So rating number one, 8 out of 10. Some fantastic tackling, great heading and reading of the game, and was in no way lucky not to give away a penalty late on. Lewandowski got exactly what he deserved for his diving all night.
Okay, so Lewandowski, I'm assuming was playing for Bayern Munich.
Oh, could be Dortmund.
Could be.
Could be Dortmund.
Although I think the last time we played Dortmund in the Champions League, we lost, did we? Or certainly we had a very difficult game away against them. So I'm going to assume it's a Bayern Munich game. And I'm going to say this is either Koscielny or Mustafi.
Koscielny or Mustafi. I'm going to say Mustafi because that would be the funniest answer.
Yeah, that's what I think it is.
It's neither.
Oh.
It is
Hector Bellerin.
Per Mertesacker.
Per Mertesacker. Get in, Per.
And it was against Dortmund. A 1-0 win, I believe, in 2013-14. Okay. Did Aaron Ramsey score that night? I think he maybe did.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
The rating 2, 8 out of 10. After a difficult night at Anfield, it wouldn't have been a surprise to see redacted teammate start. But Arteta kept faith and was rewarded with an excellent performance, although some of the shooting was a bit off. I know who that's going to be.
After a difficult night at Anfield,
it wouldn't have been a surprise to see someone else start. But Arteta kept faith and was rewarded with an excellent performance, although some of the shooting was a bit off.
Okay, so it's got to be a forward. Lacazette?
So I think it doesn't have to be a forward. I think
Someone
shoots a lot. Difficult night at Anfield. I think this is Nuno Tavares.
Okay.
I think it wouldn't have been a surprise to see Kieran Tierney.
That would make a lot of sense. Well done.
Now, what was the match after Anfield? A home win, I think, against Villa or something. Right, let's go. Player was Nuno Tavares.
Okay.
And it was a home game against Newcastle. Right. 2-0 win. There we go. Okay.
You're nailing these ones.
Well, I didn't get Per Mertesacker.
Okay, but you've got one.
I've got one out of two.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, rating 3, 0.5 out of 10. You can't complain about not getting game time, and then when you're given a chance, do something as stupid as that.
So, could it... Ooh. Who did...
I'm thinking that's got to be a red card, has it?
I think so. Or Mustafi.
Yeah, I mean, Mustafi's always a shout for a low rating. I'm trying to think of someone who's actively complained.
The only one I could think of was Albert Zambi-Lokonga, but I don't remember him doing anything 0.5 worthy.
Could it be Fabio Vieira earlier this season?
No. I don't think so.
Get sent off?
I mean, he did get sent off, but I don't even think it was...
I don't think it was in a game where I could see you dishing out a 0.5 out of 10.
Feels like a Mustafi type thing to me.
Yeah. I don't know. How far back do we think these go? Like back to like 2013 or something?
Yeah, they go a long way back, in fairness.
I've got no idea.
Yeah, there's not a lot of detail in that one, but the 0.5 makes me think.
Okay, you're going to go Mustafi.
Yeah.
It was Nicola Pepe.
Oh.
Leads away.
Right. That's a bit harsh of me, I think.
Yeah, I think that was the sort of nadir of people's perception of Pepe. I think, you know, there was a lot of frustration with
that. That was harsh. I apologise, Nico.
Sorry, Nico.
At least your career has gone from
strength to strength.
Since, yeah.
He's waiting for his Gyökeres season. Okay.
He just needs a green jism injection.
He just needs a green jism and a spell at Coventry to unlock his potential. shouldn't laugh at Coventry. I guess they're in an FA Cup semi-final. Mm. Okay, 8 out of 10. If there were questions over whether or not he's ready for this level, he answered them today. Still young, but it's hard not to like how he plays with real ambition and the forward drive he brings to the side.
Bukayo Saka.
I think Gabriel Martinelli. We could both be right.
Yeah.
Do you have a game in mind?
No, no clue. I can't remember last week.
I'm going to say Boxing Day game against Chelsea when we
okay.
It's Emile Smith Rowe from that game.
Wow, I should have known.
Well, should have known. You know, we're in the right ballpark.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Lend, we're close. We're close.
We're close. The last one, rating number 5, 7 out of 10. Played well.
However.
No, yeah. Played well. But let's hope that injury isn't as serious as it looks.
Oh.
Someone we never saw again, I would imagine.
Hector.
I'm going to say Santi, maybe.
Oh.
Santi limping out of that. What was it? A Europa League game or something?
It was, wasn't it? We won like 6-0 or something that night.
Well, it's neither of those.
Okay.
It's a player from this season. It's from the opening day against Nottingham Forest.
Oh, no.
Jurrien Timber. Played well, but let's hope that injury isn't as serious as it looks. Well, you were certainly right about it looking serious.
Yes, and it was. But hopefully, you know, we're on the right track and he can be back relatively soon.
Yeah, back in time to be the crucial man off the bench.
This is it. This is it. Okay, well, look, I think we're more or less done. Thank you, Critical T, for those player ratings. Biryani Rice on the Discord, though, wants to know if either of you have tried Saka's special Nando sauce. And would you recommend it? And there was another question about this from somebody who was concerned that, you know, in the advert they said, let's do this. And they were wondering if you got your lawyers on the case. Has any marketing decision paid off quite as much as Nando's getting Bukayo Saka involved? Because for most of last week, that was pretty much all you saw on social media was Bukayo Saka, Nando's sauce. That was it. Like, it's a genius piece of collaboration or brand fucking synergy, whatever these marketing people call it, you know?
I know. I'm just reading about the sauce now. It's made with tomato, garlic, smoked paprika, and our legendary peri-peri. Right. It's a medium level of spicy.
Who can be arsed with medium level of spice? What is the point of that? It's like international friendlies in March. You either spice or you don't spice. Don't give me this medium stuff. That's for cowards.
I think I'm with you, actually. His favourite meal, it says at Nando's, is a 4 peri-tamer boneless thighs with peri-salted chips and garlic bread. Quite heavy on the carbs, Bukayo. I suppose he's burning a lot of energy. I've not tried it.
Right.
I've not tried it. I should go and try it, shouldn't I, as an experiment. I'll report back.
Okay. Continuing the tradition of going to Nando's and reporting back, which is something we've done on this podcast before, where I
will go to a Nando's and demand to drink the Bukayo Saka sauce. The orange jism.
Excuse me, I'll have 2 boneless chicken thighs and a large goblet of Bukayo Saka's orange jism.
Lovely.
That'll go down a treat in your local Nando's, I'm sure.
That's exactly what I'll do.
I will not go to Nando's because I think it's...
Do you have Nando's in Dublin?
Yeah, yeah. We've got a few of them around, but I think it's just kind of boring chicken, really.
It is until you dribble this special sauce all over it. Let me tell you.
All right. Well, you report back on next week's show and we'll see if that's put hairs on your chest.
Okay.
The rest. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to have an episode of Waffle for you, by the way, for our Patreon members. We'll have one of those on Wednesday. That is the podcast, much like this one, in which James and I talk about anything and everything except for Arsenal, based on suggestions and questions posed by our Patreon members. So if you'd like to get involved with that and you'd like to ask something that some kind of nonsense you haven't already heard in today's show, patreon.com/arseblog is the place to be. So you can join us for that on Wednesday. For now, we will leave you, and thank you as always for being here. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Mom. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.